The following program may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
It's the Saturday Morning Cereal.
They're great!
What's your emergency?
I wish we had some Cap'n Crunch.
Death waited in the dark at the hands of a man they called the Night Stalker.
Always have to be Lucky Charms.
Yahoo! I'm Cuckoo!
Theodore Robert Bundy. You are charged 2 counts burglary, 2 counts murder in the first degree, 3 counts attempted murder in the first degree.
I'll plead not guilty right now.
The refrigerator where Jeffrey Dahmer kept body parts.
They're magically delicious.
I am prepared to die if you say it is necessary.
Recognize me, David!
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Silly rabbit.
Over the weekend, a person who loves true crime, like listened to all the big ones, like Crime Junkies and type, and had just found our podcast.
Oh, randomly?
Yes.
Dope. I love when people just stumble on it.
I was like, oh, so you didn't listen to our morning show? You just, and they were like, yeah. And then I was offended.
That they didn't listen to the morning show.
I was like, who do you think you are?
Well, John, this is a companion podcast, so it doesn't have... While we are doing the same thing here that we normally do on the show,
yes,
this is its own separate show, and
no.
people enjoy it independently
no.
of the Mixed Morning Fix.
I reject that theory.
Which is an excellent, you know, funny, comedy, lifestyle, celebrity news podcast.
Yeah.
Would highly recommend it.
Yes.
But that's not what we're here for. We want the gross stuff here.
No.
We want it gross and horrifying. Mm. We want nightmares, and we want them now. Called J.G. Wentworth 877 Nightmares Now.
Do you get nightmares from the stuff you
not
read?
And, Are you serious?
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I'm immune to it now.
Oh, yeah. I'll watch Forensic Files and fall asleep like a baby.
Just really?
Like, and then he did what? Gross. Cozy up on my little pillow.
Go ahead.
Well, this week we're going to do something that is one of my favorite things. I know it's one of your favorite things, too, because we don't get into the dirty details.
Uh-huh.
I just found a list on Ranker that I really liked.
Oh, okay.
And so we're going to do some of them, some of the stories from the list. It's a long list. There are a lot of great stories on it. Would highly recommend. I'm going to put the link to it in the description of this podcast. But on Ranker, it is creepy death row inmates. These are death row stories that you might not have heard of, but these are inmates who have been on death row for a while.
Okay, still awaiting death row.
Still awaiting the penalty.
Okay.
Still awaiting their execution. But I haven't heard of like any of these murders, and they're nuts.
So let me ask you, as you go through this, are the Lafferty brothers, because you did
they
that.
They weren't on the list.
They weren't on the list. Okay.
No, these are, the Lafferty brothers are pretty famous here in Utah.
Yeah.
Like these are cases that you might never have heard about.
Really?
And it's going to blow your mind when you hear them for the first time, because it blew my mind this morning. I was like, ooh, gross.
Uh-oh.
But the article is incredible. The guy who wrote it, his name is Phil Gibbons. Big ups to Phil Gibbons. He basically wrote Saturday Morning Cereal for us this week.
What up, Phil?
Thank you, Phil.
But yeah, we're just going to go over a few of them. Like I said, if you want to read the rest of them, I would recommend it if you like being horrified down in the description of this podcast. Thank you. We're going to start with our friend Andre Thomas. So back in 2005, Andre Thomas, he's living in Texas. He's in his early 20s, and he is convicted of murdering his ex-wife and his 2 young children. And he gets sentenced to death. The murder was pretty gruesome. He stabbed them all, but he stabbed them all with separate knives because, quote, he didn't want to contaminate their blood and allow the demons inside them to live.
Oh, yeah. He's not crazy at all.
So if he crosses blood, then obviously that will dirty up the blood and the demon can stay
obviously.
Living in there.
You don't cross streams, man.
Listen,
we all watch Ghostbusters.
We all have been to the Boy Scout camp. I mean, watched Ghostbusters. We know not to cross streams. So anyway, so that was like, obviously, this guy's out of his mind.
Cuckoo. Yes.
You know, he's a little cuckoo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty gross behavior. That's pretty messed up. But you know what's even grosser?
What?
What happens after the murders?
What?
After being taken into custody... He pokes his own eye out. He self-mutilates. He pokes it. He rips his own eye out.
Nope.
While he's in custody.
No.
So here's the thing. Now his defense attorneys are like, oh, we're going to get this guy off easy.
Absolutely.
He's crazy. You can't kill a crazy person. He's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, despite the self-mutilation and despite the opinions of several psychologists who thought that he suffered from a severe case of schizophrenia,
yeah,
he was ruled to be sane enough to stand trial. One doctor said his act was the result of psychosis from substance abuse, not mental illness.
Sure.
So they were like, yeah, he might be mentally ill, but at the end of the day, he's been mentally ill his whole life and never killed anyone. It was the drugs this time that made him do it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh my gosh, he ripped his own eye out.
He ripped his own eye out. He was convicted and sentenced to death in 2005. In 2008, 3 years later, he tried to commit suicide. It didn't work. Mm. So when that didn't work, he took out his other eye and ate it.
Yeah.
And ate it.
What is wrong with you?
No.
What is wrong with you? I'm done. I don't want to listen anymore.
So he's completely blind now. His appeal is currently kind of bouncing around, you know, the courts, because they're trying to retest his mental fitness. I'm going to go ahead and say that is pretty decent evidence that he is not mentally fit. Technically, he's not on death row, though, so he was on death row. Mm-hmm. He got relocated to a psychiatric facility, clearly.
Yeah.
Someone who needs to be in a psychiatric facility. But he still faces the death penalty, which is actually kind of crazy, because you're not supposed to rip people out of mental hospitals and kill them. Like, that's like something that we've all agreed. If they're not mentally competent enough to stay in prison, then they're not mentally competent enough to be killed for their crimes.
Dude.
So
that whole thing is messed up.
I know. I told you. That's what I'm saying, man. How have you never heard of that story?
I don't know.
How have you not heard of Oedipus Rex over there in that jail?
I just was watching a Minority Report. Did you ever see that one? Mm-hmm. It's an old Tom Cruise, and the guy rips his eyes out, and he just has like these sockets.
No, thank you.
So, yeah.
Terrible people.
Not interested. So, yeah, he's trying to appeal his death sentence.
Sweet,
but,
thanks.
I don't know, guys. I don't know about that one. All right, we're going to move over to Richard. Richard Farley, back in 1984, he met his coworker, Laura Black, while they were working at a Silicon Valley tech firm, basically, and fell in love with her. Like,
head over heels.
Got a little, we'll say that. That's a nice way of saying it.
Oh, okay.
But he got scary involved. And he starts, flirting with her. She does not respond. He starts asking her out on dates. She says no. She's setting very clear boundaries. She's being very, very clear with this guy.
Uh-huh.
She's not interested. So then she starts getting letters and gifts delivered to her house. Then she starts noticing him drive by her house regularly.
If romantic comedies have taught us anything, persistence is key.
That's not the truth.
I'm pretty sure.
Persistence, I'm glad we're going to get into that later. So
oh, are we really?
Oh, up.
Okay, good.
No, leave people alone. They don't like it.
Mm.
He even started following her to the gym. And like, obviously, what can you do? It's a public gym.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd just sit there and watch her work out. That's not cool.
No.
He harassed her at the office. He harassed her on the street. He harassed her at her home. And he gradually just started threatening her if she didn't go out with him. He gets fired 2 years later in 1986. I don't know if it was related to the stalking or not, but he ends up getting fired. However, he continues to stalk Laura forever, basically, until she gets a temporary restraining order. And once she has that, he stops stalking her because, obviously, he's going to get thrown in jail if he shows up. But that's not the end of it for old Richard Farley, because 2 years after the restraining order was put into place on February 16th, 1988, he's out of a job. He doesn't have any money. His house is about to get foreclosed on. The woman that he's quote unquote in love with it's unrequited, I would say. and she filed a restraining order against him. So he breaks. He drives his motor home to the Silicon Valley company where he met Laura. And just start shooting everyone. He takes a shotgun and just indiscriminately kills.
What year was this?
This is 86.
Okay.
88.
Wow. He's really ahead of his time.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's crazy that you haven't heard of this guy growing up in California.
That's why, yeah.
Because, like, Silicon Valley, that's not terribly far from where you grew up. So, yeah, he went in and he just starts shooting everyone. He gets to Laura's office. She still works there.
Oh, gosh.
She sees him. She slams the door in his face. He blows the door off the hinges and ends up hitting her. He hits her in the shoulder, and he punctured one of her lungs.
Oh.
He shot and killed 4 employees. He wounded like 7 others, I think it ended up being. But she survived.
So he
Laura survived.
So he never shot her. He beat her up.
Oh, no. He blasted the door open and then shot her.
Oh, he shot her as well.
He shot her as well.
Oh.
I'm sorry. So he killed 4 employees immediately on the scene and wounded a bunch of others. Laura ends up surviving, but in total, 7 employees end up dying that day.
Oh, wow.
He was convicted and sentenced to death on January 17th of 1992. And he's still on death row in San Quentin.
Still?
San Quentin, let me tell you. I got a podcast for you if you're ever interested. You know what one?
Yeah.
Ear Hustle.
Ear Hustle's so good.
Ear Hustle is so good.
Yeah, if you've never
good.
Listened to it, it's really good.
It's a podcast that they make it in prison,
mm-hmm.
And it's an inmate who runs it, and the inmate co-hosts it with the multimedia teacher within the prison,
Whoa.
And they interview all these prisoners, and they talk about prison life and what it means, like prison culture. It is fascinating. It is so good. But that's not the podcast I was going to promote, actually. There was a different podcast I was just about to promote. And I'm glad that you brought up romantic comedies and stuff.
Oh, yes.
There's a podcast that a listener recommended to me. Sarah from Ohio, actually.
Sarah.
Listener. She started a new podcast called Simply Stalking. And she goes, I think if you're into crime, you'll really like this. What they do is they bring in a victim of stalking and they have them tell their story as a firsthand account on the podcast. And it's just... Yep, I was in an abusive household. My parents didn't want me. They sold me basically to this guy, and I was just his slave forever.
Oh,
and
gosh.
And then I tried to get away from him a bunch of times. I ran away, and he started stalking me. And I tried so hard to get a restraining order, but the courts make it so hard for this and this and this. And it is so horrifying to hear. And like even the ones where it wasn't an abusive thing to begin with, just the ones where you have like a random coworker stalking you and just the never being able to feel safe, never being able to go to the gym, you know, or go get breakfast with your family or whatever, because that guy could be around. Horrifying. So if you think you're being cute by dropping love letters or driving by someone's house, knock it off. It's disgusting and no one likes it. If they don't like you, they don't like you. You just got to deal with that. And if you're being stalked, don't let it happen.
No.
You need to call someone, make sure someone knows about it, file a report with the police. Do whatever you can legally to protect yourself, and don't feel like you're overreacting, because if someone it's just a little step, I feel, between stalking and kidnapping. Like it's never far apart.
Yeah.
So take it seriously, you know? You really want to. But I'd recommend the Simply Stalking podcast. It is fascinating. It's so good. Especially if you like this kind of gross stuff. It's not for you, John.
No.
I wouldn't say.
No.
But, you know.
For others.
For others, for sure. All right. We're going to move over back to Texas.
Hey.
Man, Texas got some real wackos. September 8th, 1992. Scott Panetti. He shaves his head, dresses up in military garb. Mm. You know, normal stuff. Normal people stuff. He drives himself on down to his in-law's house in South Texas. Now, his wife had left him with their daughter. And she's like, I can't deal with this anymore. And she had moved in with her parents. She claims that she left over horrible abuse that occurred all throughout their marriage, as well as a bunch of other, quote, strange behavior. Scott had a really extensive history of psychiatric hospitalization. So not just he's, you know, dealing with a mental health struggle, like he's repeatedly been hospitalized for behavioral reasons.
Right.
And he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. Some of his odd behaviors that she was talking about include burying furniture because he thought the devil was in it.
Hmm.
So he'd be like, ah, that lamp looks shady. I'm going to throw that in the backyard and throw it in the pit, bury it. He also would nail the shades. I'm sorry. Excuse me. He also believed that his neighbors wanted to film him doing everything. So he was
classic
Truman Show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's funny. Veronica and I were talking about this. My roommate the other day. She goes, "Yeah, you know, everyone nowadays thinks that the government is like our smart speakers are listening, the phones are watching, and that we're so interesting that everyone's watching all the time." She goes, "That's just schizophrenia.
We're all just schizophrenic."
She's like, because before that, we all thought we were getting Truman Showed.
Yeah.
And before the Truman Show, everyone thought the CIA was coming after you. And before the CIA, you know, we've always had an entity that is always coming after us, the big scary entity. But, you know, usually it's just Schizophrenia.
Yeah.
It's just us believing.
It's just us.
He broke into his in-law's house. He shot his father and mother-in-law to death immediately. Then he took his wife and the baby hostage. Mm. And he holds them hostage for a little while, but ultimately they end up getting released. So he ends up getting arrested for the murder of his in-laws and the kidnapping, and he goes to court. In the courtroom, he shows up wearing a, and I'm quoting the article here specifically, a flamboyant purple cowboy costume, which is a pimp costume. Let's stop calling it anything else. If it's like crushed purple velvet, it's a pimp outfit. Offering long, rambling, incoherent legal arguments. He represented himself, by the way.
Ah, there you go.
Again.
Yes.
Telltale sign of a crazy person. No, I got it. No, I'm good. So he would just get up there and he'd just ramble. And he tried to subpoena quite the list of folks to come in and help him out. He tried to subpoena actress Anne Bancroft.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
He tried to subpoena John F. Kennedy, who had been dead for 30 years by this point. He tried to subpoena the Pope. He tried to subpoena Jesus Christ himself.
Yep.
Hey.
Ultimately, it did not work.
Really?
I know. He was sentenced to death on September 22nd of 1995.
Oh my gosh. Imagine me the judge on that one.
I know. Just like, what does Anne Bancroft have to...
Right.
What does she got to do with this?
Like, you gotta be kind of there for everyone's rights and make sure they get a fair trial, but at the same time, you're like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
The dude's wearing a pimp outfit right now.
I just... That's not what I expected to be dealing with today.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to look at a lot of grisly stuff.
Right.
I gotta look through some photos from when he killed his in-laws. I just don't need this right now. Needless to say, litigation over Panetti's competence to represent himself and his eligibility to be executed had basically just bounced from court to court for a long time. In 2014, he came very close to an execution, but he got a stay at the very last minute. He remains on death row right now, but it's still not clear whether or not that's going to happen.
I'm shocked. He's in Texas.
I know. They usually they love an express lane.
Yes.
I don't know if this is still the law, but I remember very specifically... from the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, Ron White
stand-up.
Talking about how
yes.
they passed a law that if 10 eyewitnesses saw you do what you did, you're just getting automatic death penalty. They're not even going to bother with appeals. They're just going to do it. So I can't imagine that was constitutional or that it lasted very long. But
yes, that's
who knows? It's Texas.
We're referencing Ron White now as part of our...
We're always referencing that's Ron White. Fine. We referenced the Blue Collar Comedy Tour yesterday on the show. Anyway. All right, John Robinson, this is a rough one. Get ready.
Oh, boy.
John Robinson. He has a lengthy record of criminal behavior. Mm-hmm. Going all the way back to 1967, he was embezzling from a doctor who he was working for. He was working as a lab tech, and he was stealing from the doctor's office. So all the way back then, he has a criminal past. Throughout the 70s, he commits a bunch of white-collar crimes in Kansas City, while also attempting to create the image of a solid, community-oriented family person.
Sure.
Because, like, that's what they all did. I mean, John Wayne Gacy took care of his mom. He was, like, the head of the Junior Chamber of Commerce. He owned a bunch of KFCs. He was, like, a Boy Scout leader.
He was a clown.
Church choir leader. He was a birthday clown.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they hide in plain sight, like, these monster criminals.
Gacy meet the president even at one point?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he was very involved.
Yeah. Is it Nixon?
Yeah, I know he was a really involved Republican, but I don't remember if it was Nixon
it
that he met.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to tell you that. Yeah. But, yeah, he, like... He was a well-known businessman.
Yeah.
Like they don't try to hide themselves usually.
Sure.
Obvious exceptions, but yeah, they're like Bundy, so loud, so out and proud, going to be a lawyer, meeting gals everywhere,
yeah.
clubbing. Yeah, he's just nuts. So he basically committed crime after crime after crime, but because he had done such a great job of creating this aura of family-oriented togetherness. He never got sentenced to anything more than a couple months.
Mm.
So he could have been in prison for a long time and prevented all the horrible things I'm about to tell you. But unfortunately, the justice system doesn't get it right all the time is what we'll leave that at. In the early 80s, Robinson starts to become interested in some more, Spicy behavior is how we're going to put that.
Okay.
Involving sadomasochism. Gosh, what is wrong with me? And sexual torture.
Oh, no.
1984, he hires a young woman. Basically, she was just out of high school. She was looking for an opportunity to get some money.
Yep.
Probably saving up for school or life or whatever. But he tells her that he'll hire her. And he tells her family that she was going to go out of town for training. I don't know what he hired her for. But that was the story was she's going to go out of town for a little while. She's got to go through this training program. And then when she gets back, she's going to work for me.
Yeah.
So everyone's cool with it. Well, she ends up disappearing.
Mm.
No trace. No word from her. Robinson tells the police. He tells the family. Yeah, I don't know. I sent her out for training. She never showed up. I don't know. It was the strangest thing. Her parents end up getting a typewritten letter signed by her, stating that she was fine. She just didn't want to see her family ever again. And the investigation ended up getting dropped because of that letter. Yep, she's a runaway. See you later. You'll find the more like kidnapping stuff you read, especially if they're quote unquote bad kids, the more you'll realize that they don't care about kidnapping. Like, they're looking for any excuse to pawn it off on a runaway situation. And to be fair, there are a lot of runaways that they end up dealing with. But I would argue that if a minor is running away, you should probably look into that because they're either running from something dangerous or they're running towards something dangerous. So even if it's not a kidnapping, you really should do some investigating there, Officer Krupke. What are you doing? In 1985, so that girl just disappears, and we never end up knowing what happened to her.
You have no follow-up with that?
Nope. That's it.
Gosh.
In 1985, he befriended a struggling young single mother in a charity scam. So he tells her that he's running a charity. He promises her a job. He promises to get her housing. And she was super excited because being a single mom in Chicago is impossible.
Yeah.
She accepts his offer and then disappears. Within a couple weeks of her disappearing, remember, single mother, he tells his brother and his sister-in-law, I know of a baby that you can adopt.
Oh, gosh.
And you're not going to have to go through all the red tape because the mom killed herself. So they just need a place to put this kid. I can help you out. They've been trying to have a baby forever. So they're like, oh, yeah, this sounds great. And they've been on the adoption list forever. They're just so excited that they're finally going to get their baby. So he mails them some counterfeit adoption, like really official-looking counterfeit adoption forms, and tells them to fill them out, send them back with a check for $5,500.
They do it.
He mails them a baby. And just gives that baby away after he killed the baby's mom.
Oh, my.
Is that nuts?
That's terrible.
I know. He then, in 1987, employed and disappeared another woman.
Mm.
And then he gets sent back to jail for 6 years. Not for murdering a bunch of women and stealing babies, but for fraud charges and parole violations.
That's what he gets.
So he's in jail. Now get this. This is, I think, one of the crazier parts of the story. He's in jail. He gets really close to the librarian. Her name is Beverly. Beverly Bonner. Beverly really, really takes a liking to Mr. Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically just gives up her whole life. He convinces her to divorce her husband. And when he gets out, they move to Kansas City together. And once Robinson got Beverly, he gets out, Beverly leaves her husband, they move to Kansas City, and then he tells Beverly's mother to start sending her alimony checks. She left her husband, she gets the alimony, start sending the alimony checks to a P.O. box. And as soon as the first alimony check shows up in the P.O. box, you never hear from Beverly again.
Oh.
So he's just collecting her alimony checks, pretending that she's around, cashing them, and that she doesn't want to speak to her ex-husband.
Right.
So it's not like unusual for her to just disappear and keep cashing the check.
Yeah.
But yeah. So around this time, Robinson is trolling like the local paper's personal ads.
Oh yeah.
For S&M relationships, which is totally cool, unless you're going to kidnap and murder people. So, by the early 90s, he gets into the internet. So he's done all of this through personal ads, but he gets into the internet. He starts participating in sadomasochistic chat rooms under the handle Slave Master, which again, if that's your thing, I'm not going to yuck your yum. As long as everyone's consenting and cool with it, then it's fine. But you should be aware of people like Mr. Robinson here.
Mm-hmm.
He lured several women off of the internet into real life. And they all disappeared once they showed up to him.
Gosh.
He's prolific.
Yeah.
Because he's been doing this since the 70s.
But how have we not heard of this person before?
That's what I'm saying. We keep making Ted Bundy documentaries. I feel like there's a new Ted Bundy documentary
constantly.
Every time I open Netflix.
Yeah.
But there are so many fascinating killers that we could learn so much more about.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why we love Bundy so much.
His real keys.
Basic.
Yeah.
Basic. Anyway. So he lured a Polish college student off the internet. And he basically tells her, you have to sign this slave contract. So it's 115 items of all the things that she agrees to do.
Uh-huh.
Basically, she's giving up all of her rights as a human being and financially, and she's giving them all to him.
It's like 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah,
they have a contract.
Very similar.
Uh-huh.
She disappears in 1999.
Mm.
In June of 2000. So now we're into the 2000s.
Gosh.
Suddenly all these victims, because it's not just the women that he's disappearing. He's obviously meeting up with a lot of women.
Others.
Who are just answering his ads and showing up. But then things get really out of hand and he starts roughing them up. So they all start going to the police and they're like, this guy is weird.
Yeah.
He's into some weird stuff. And listen, that's coming from someone who spends a lot of time on a BDSM website.
Right.
This guy's a weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the police might think we're all weirdos here, but this is like an extra level.
Yeah.
So you got to do something about it. Police got search warrants. They look through his home, they look through his storage facility, and they survey his land.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
They find two metal drums, and they crack them open,
and
there are bodies inside.
Oh.
So there are two bodies, each one in each drum, and there's just tons of evidence everywhere.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Like, they did not look very hard into this guy before, because he was not covering anything up. Tons of evidence tying him to him. At another storage facility in Missouri, they found three more bodies in barrels. All of his victims died by blunt force trauma. In 2002, Robinson was convicted for multiple murders and sentenced to death. He was tried again in Missouri, where he had also committed crimes, pled guilty to 5 murders in order to avoid the death sentence there. Officially, he is tied to 8 deaths. Unofficially, law enforcement thinks that there could be dozens.
Yeah.
Like,
that's what it sounds
like.
He
was around forever. He is awaiting execution in Kansas, but obviously he's appealing. So
how those are the stories where I'm like, we don't need a wait.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, quite honestly, I have a hard time with the quote unquote mental competency issues because one, I don't think that it's actually all that fair to the like mentally handicapped or to the severely mentally ill. I don't know that necessarily. So, okay, so they're too crazy to kill, but we're still going to throw them in prison or we're going to throw them in a hospital and not try to rehab them or, you know, I don't think that that's a fair shake for them either. But at the same time, all these people who are getting judged competent, I feel like that's a crazy thing to murder someone. You know what I mean?
You mean everyone's
like,
crazy?
Like, you've got to be a little crazy anyway. Like,
right.
you're not thinking with a clear, conscious mind if you're getting to the point where you can kill someone and be cool with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just feel like there's something that's not clicking there. And so to say that someone is competent, is more competent than someone else, when at the end of the day, the result was kind of the same.
Uh-huh.
I have a hard time understanding that. Maybe we should have like a FBI profiler or someone who understands criminal minds better than I do call in and talk to me about this. But I just feel like if you kill someone, you're crazy. And we need to do a better job of dealing with murderers and crazy people. We just need to figure it out.
I don't want them. They don't deserve to be rehabilitated, though.
Well, yeah, but I also don't feel like they deserve to be tortured forever.
That's why I said kill them.
Well,
that's my answer to that.
But then the problem is they end up in prison anyway for if we got the death penalty. I also am a big believer in the right to appeal. So if we're gonna kill someone, we better be really sure that he did it.
Like this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this guy obviously
right.
did it. Yeah.
That's
for sure did it. But then like you think about people like Scott Peterson. I'm not saying Scott Peterson didn't do it, but there's so much evidence now that suggests that he might not.
I know.
I'm not saying he didn't do it. I'm saying that there's a good chance that he probably still did do it. But I think there's enough evidence to suggest that he didn't, that he should never have been
You
charged.
And I both listened to that podcast where there's reasonable doubt.
So
oh
much
my
reasonable
gosh,
doubt.
I know.
And
I'm
that's
shocked.
What our justice system is based on. These are the sort of reforms that I'd like to see in our criminal justice system is we don't sentence anyone, I don't think, properly. Like it's very subjective the way that the judge decides to sentence you.
Mm.
And it's almost never fair, I don't think. I don't
Not
think
often.
That the people who deserve it are getting a fair enough, are getting a long enough sentence. And I think the people who don't deserve to be in prison are getting way too long.
I'm saying you got bodies in a barrel, you get executed. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
I think that's a fair opinion to have, for sure. All right, one more.
Okay.
In 1982, George Banks, he was an ex-con.
Mary Poppins?
Is that a Mary Poppins character?
That's the dad in Mary Poppins.
I've never seen Mary Poppins. Nor the Mary Poppins remake, Mary Poppins Returns.
George Banks. Continue, please.
Anyway, Danny, you want to throw in anything on George Banks?
Nope.
All right.
Mary Poppins?
I watched it when I was like four. I don't remember.
Gosh, y'all make me sick.
See?
Execute him.
Okay. Anyway, he was an ex-convict and a prison guard. You know, that's cool to have both of those things be the same thing. Because of erratic and violent behavior, he was placed on leave and subject to a mental health evaluation. You know, that's probably a good thing. I think it's a good thing if someone's violent to just be like, everything okay up there? Let's check that noodle of yours, see what's going on. A few weeks later, after an evening at a party, Banks used an assault-style rifle to kill 8 people in his own home. 3 women were the mothers of his children.
Three.
So he had 3 baby mamas there. Uh-huh. And then he killed 5 children.
Oh,
4 of them were his children.
Oh, come on, man.
So he had a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women.
They were all in the same house? Yeah.
Maybe it was like a holiday. I didn't get too many of the details about the party, but I'd imagine maybe it was like a holiday party, and like it's just easier to do it all at once, get it over with.
Ugh.
Or maybe they're in a polyamorous thing. I don't know.
Okay.
That's none of my business. I'm not asking too many questions. He went outside, so he kills all those people in his house. He goes outside, shoots 2 neighbors, kills one of them. Then he went to another girlfriend's trailer, so polyamorous, turns out.
There it is.
Killed her, his baby son, his girlfriend's mother, and his girlfriend's nephew. He shot his girlfriend's brothers, but they all survived. And after a standoff, he surrenders. 13 murders.
Oh my gosh.
And one, all of his family.
Yeah.
13
Wiped
of his
it all
family
out.
Members. Yeah. Family Annihilators. That's another topic that I'd love to get into at some point. Do a whole episode on Family Annihilators because there are so many of them. They're all nuts. Oh, my gosh. Chris Watts. Anyway. He was charged with 13 murders. In explanation, he told the police that he did not want his children, who were biracial, to be victims of a race war. So, you know, let's just nip it in the bud now.
He
it's
going to
be way
them.
Worse down the road.
Yeah.
He testifies at his own trial, claiming that the police killed his victims when they showed up.
Yeah.
So he had only wounded them, but the police got there and killed them all off in an attempt to frame him for the murders.
Mm-hmm.
This despite the fact that he shot most of his victims point blank right in the head. Mm-hmm. So, you know. He was convicted... but ultimately declared not mentally competent for execution. Despite his age, Banks is still considered too dangerous to be housed anywhere but the death penalty unit.
Really?
So even though he's not mentally competent to be on death row, they have to house him on death row because he's just too violent.
Yeah.
So they're like, all right, well, I guess this is just where you're going to be. We can't let you in with the other prison. We can't let you in with the other violent people. You're too violent for them.
When you're violent for the violence.
Yeah.
That's
but amazing. There was a Netflix show where they went into prisons and they talked to a lot of murderers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to remember the name, but I remember this guy talked about how he was in prison for like low level crimes. And he got so sick of being in general population that he got a new cellmate. The cellmate turns out was a pedo, so he strangled him and ended up on death row. And he's like, I just couldn't be in general population anymore. Death row, it's nice. It's quiet. Everyone minds their business. It's a step up from where I was. And from where I wasn't getting out anytime soon anyway.
Yeah.
So he's like, and he's a pedophile, so no one cares.
Yeah.
So I it worked out. I'd do it again. I'm like, oh, it is hard to look a man in the eyes after he's murdered someone and then watch him say, yeah, I'd do it again in a heartbeat. No problem.
Dude.
I just like killing. All right. Thank you for that.
Yes.
Anyway, great article. Have you heard of any of those murderers?
No, of course not.
And how out of control were they?
Insane.
I know. Crazy. So you got to read the rest of those stories. Again, that'll be in the description of this podcast. But those are some of the craziest death row criminals you've never heard of.